You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Friday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Friday, March 27th, episode 3914. Good morning, horse people.
Well, it's Horse Husband Day, and we have Horse Husband Benjamin Tutt with us today. And I think you two have something in common. Find that out a little bit later on. And let's just say he had a kind of a little bit of a rocky start to his to becoming a horse husband. Also, we're going to do some equine history. We have some really bad ads, but we wanted to start out with something that's kind of somber today, and something, though, that means a lot to you because you've seen this horse 100 times.
Yeah, our sweet friend Shy Boy, Monty's horse that he famously gentled in the wild via documentary from the BBC, passed away at the age, I think he was 33 years old. So, I mean, amazing life that he had, and he got great vet care at the end of his life. You know, I think that, you know, Pergolide keeps all of them going. So
he had a pretty sweet deal the last 10 years there hanging out at Monty's.
Last 20 years. I mean, my God, his whole life has been like Monty would bring him in the classroom. He took him into his house. Like the horse was just, I mean, they were just best friends. It was just so apparent that they were best friends. And Shy Boy was an ambassador at the ranch at Flag Is Up. He had his like a stall, people could visit him in his paddock. You know, there a Flag Is Up is open to visitors, so you can just go in anytime and people would just walk in and just visit with Shy Boy. Super sweet. Now Monty did write, you know, he dictates to Debbie or Pat his words, and he wrote, "No horse will ever remain in my memory more than this wonderful American Mustang." That's just a lot. He's had some a lot of horses. "He loved virtually everyone, and all the horse world loved him. I am now in my 90s, and I'm sure it won't be long till I'm with him again. All who knew him will agree he should be in everybody's memory." So just in case you guys don't know, like there's been books, Monty's written books about him. I have the one here that's called Shy Boy, the Horse That Came In From the Wild. And that's him talking about the whole thing. They even did a kid's book that I bought for Lucas years and years ago. It's called I'm Shy Boy, Here's My Story. And it's an illustrated, beautiful book. And the BBC did a documentary because nobody believed he could do it. Right. No, he'd spent so much time with Mustangs in the wild as a kid growing up that he decided to see if he could gentle one. And of course, the added pressure of TV cameras and the BBC filming the whole thing and the whole, I don't know where you probably find the documentary on YouTube.
I don't know. It's called Shy Boy, the Horse That Came From the Wild. And it was done in 1999.
99. Yeah. Okay.
So I'm sure it's still around somewhere, I would think.
Yeah, he spent 3 days on horseback following Shy Boy across all of the, you know, hundreds of miles. And then after he did get him gentled and they got him tacked up and they got a rider on him in the wild, I think he spent some time, I can't remember how long it was. Monty decided to see if he wanted to be domesticated or wild, and they actually let Shy Boy loose in the wild and they camped out, and spoiler alert, he came back. He was like, "I think I'll live with you guys. This is a little better." So it's a very, very sweet horse, sweet story.
And very original Road to the Horse right there.
I mean, that's the OG Road to the Horse. Exactly right. Without a round pin.
Before the Kentucky Horse Park.
Yeah. Yeah. So his got the documentaries and books and just such a big part of Monty's life and Flag Is Up Farm. So I'm so pleased I got to know him. I actually posted a picture on my my Flyover Farm Facebook page, and you know, usually I post something and it gets a couple hundred likes. This has like 700. Like, it's a picture of Monty on Shy Boy, and I was on my Mustang Thor, and just like one of the pictures I'll cherish my entire life. So
I'll put that one in the show notes for today.
Okay, too. There you go. Yeah. So anyway, sad news, but I just wanted to make mention. I know it's Friday and whatever, but just, you know, it's touch my heart, and the horse was amazing. And I'm sure the Roberts family is sad waking up without him on the farm, but he lived a good life. And I did talk to Debbie, and she said that it was a very beautiful end. So, right. Which is always nice when it's not a panicked end, you know? So, but she said it was a beautiful end and very tasteful and no, you know, drama.
Good. All right. Well, our best to the entire family over there, Debbie and the whole gang. Well, we're going to do some daily whinnies here and change gears a little bit because it is Friday.
From the podcast to the barn, here's some hidden birthday wishes to keep you warm. Happy birthday, friends.
Well, we have three auditor birthdays this weekend: Allison Marie, Michelle Bush, and Michelle Schneider. It's Michelle Day. So happy birthday to all of you. Also, I wanted to give a special shout out to Connor, who is going on the Horse Lovers Cruise with us.
Hi, Connor.
I heard you're a big fan, and I can't wait to meet you and your family. Got a nice email from his mom today. So we'll see you in Alaska here in, well,
oh my,
what, 6 weeks?
I think. Are you so excited? Are you freaking out?
I'm starting to get excited now. We booked this so long ago. Was it a year and a half, maybe? And that's the longest we had ever booked before a cruise. But for Alaska cruises, you have to do that. So,
what is that like to have vacations planned out well in advance and know what you're going to do every day?
We never had that before. So it's been a long wait. Now it's finally getting real, because now it's like, are my passports still good? You know, we have to look at all those things and do the final.
Do you
plans.
Need a passport for Alaska?
The ship comes back into Vancouver. So
good to know.
Yeah.
See, there's your lesson, everybody listening who's going on the cruise. Take your passport. Although I never got a real ID, so I have to go through with my passport anyway. Well,
do they do that in Oklahoma, or haven't they figured that out yet?
They do it, but you can go through with your passport instead. I still have my Arizona driver's license because it doesn't expire till 2042. And I got it 20 years ago. So they just made, and then I'm like, I don't want a new one. I like my Arizona one.
You're going to get arrested.
It's fine. Everything's fine.
You know what they do too, and I had to look at this. I looked at this six times to make sure. If your passport expires within 6 months of taking the cruise, they won't let you take the cruise.
Yep.
Is that true of flying too?
Yep, you can have it because think, because potentially you could go to that other country and stay there, and then you can't get back.
Well, so I checked it about a dozen times, and it ironically, it's 9 months till it expires.
Oh boy,
so I was close.
You're making me stressed out. I gotta go look at mine.
I hadn't looked at it in years. Apparently, 10 years I hadn't looked at it is what it is. Oh, now, you can renew them online, which apparently is easier now than it used to be, going to the get your picture taken at the Rite Aid and then going to the courthouse.
Yeah, and then go to the post office here.
Yeah, going to the courthouse here, waiting in line. Anyway, all right, Daly, your turn, I think, right?
Yeah.
We talked about the most random crap.
Just nothing. Just a show about nothing. It's Friday. What are you going to do? And let's continue the trend of, I don't know if you guys listened to the show Wednesday, but I did a whole segment about things that you say that probably, and Glenn, if this is inappropriate, cut it out and tell me when we redo my daily whinny, because I've gone on now Facebook and I've asked you guys to post what are some of the things, and we'll get to yours on Monday, but some of the things that you say that don't land the same with non-horse people.
Okay, wait a minute before you continue, let me, I don't know if I have the beeper button. I don't know which one's the beeper button. Let me test it here. All right. That's not the beeper button. That'll do.
That'll work. No, so Amigo, my horse that I bought in California that's shipped here and I had castrated, and he is like, I mean, he was an adult stallion. He was a giant male stallion, and he's since been castrated, but I have like a very specific way to bring him in. So like no horses can be in the barn, and I have to lead him in from the paddock. And when and I bring everybody in, he stands next to Carl. Carl don't care. So whatever. And anytime you walk a horse by, he's like, rah! You know. And so then when I turn him out, I can't turn out any horses until I turn him out, because he needs to not see anybody outside. Otherwise, he turns into a big giant stallion. But he still gets quite excited when I bring him in. And like, I don't know why, it's just a thing he did. So yesterday I was talking to Zoe, who is out here with me a couple of days a week. She half leases Ace, and I'm talking to Zoe. Unbeknownst to me, there's some construction people that are walking around with Chad looking at whatever they were looking at. Some electric people. So I come in the barn and I'm like, Zoe, his wiener dropped down, but it stayed floppy this time. Oh, my poor husband is gonna leave me. I'm happy about that. Like, it's now starting to, the gas tank is starting to empty. It's still behavioral, but maybe it's not as functioning as it was. And I'm like, it stayed floppy. And I just, and I'm like, and Zoe, all she does is she looks over at Chad, like, because Chad's probably about 30 yards away. I didn't see him, but she knew he was there and walking around with these, like, electricians.
Oh, they talk about that all day.
Hi, how are you? Good to meet you.
They talk about that all day. That's the highlight of their week. What are you talking
about?
Yeah,
they're like spraying, you know, the lines on the ground so you can dig first. Those guys, the 611 guys. I was like, hi, hello, how are you?
The nice electricians, you. They dream about coming across a naked woman in a house. Instead, they get you.
Oh, God.
It's weird. This was not on their fantasy list.
Yay, it's floppy.
I think we have to go to our guest after this.
I'm embarrassed right now just remembering it.
Want to reach a passionate, engaged audience of horse lovers? The Horse Radio Network, with thousands of listeners worldwide, offers unique sponsorship opportunities to connect your brand with horse owners, riders, and enthusiasts. Over 90% of our listeners have bought a product from a HRN ad in the past year. Partner with HRN and take your brand to the next level. Visit www.horseradionetwork.com/advertise today.
Well, Jamie, I'm so excited today to have our Horse Husband of the Month, and he actually is one of our family here at Equine Network, and that's how I know about him. His name is Ben Tutt, which, by the way, sounds like, it does sound like an emperor from, or a pharaoh from Egypt, right?
Thank you.
Do you qualify for that? Are there statues in your honor, Ben?
I get asked that, but I haven't come across a statue yet. No. I haven't explored Egypt, but there might
you
be
get
one.
Asked, I doubt you get asked that.
Yeah, never. It's never been asked.
Okay. Well, that's why you come here, Ben. That's why you come exactly. here for the good stuff. So, Ben, your wife has actually been on our show, right, Jessica?
Correct. Jessica, the chief science officer with Spalding Labs, and proud to say that she's my wife and proud to be her horse husband.
And she's been a great guest. We love having her on. But did she grow up in a horsey family?
Yes. She's been on the back of a horse since she's been home from the hospital. And that's how she was born and raised. And her dad has gone to Worlds for team penning. And So she's got a really interesting background when it comes to horses.
So and he's a man's man, cowboy man.
Yes, exactly.
And you're a city boy, from what I understand, right?
Yes.
Where'd
yes.
you grow up?
So I grew up in Springfield, Illinois. So smaller metropolitan area, but I wasn't raised on a farm. We were critter people. We love animals.
Yeah, but dogs and cats don't count.
Dogs,
as farmers.
Yeah, exactly. Dogs, cats, hamsters, gerbils, guinea pigs. Yeah, those
goldfish don't count.
Yes, exactly. So You know, I didn't have a farm background until I met Jess.
Well, how'd you meet her? Let's start there.
So we actually met at my previous employer. I worked retail for about 20 years, and it was a pet store.
Okay.
And so when her father met me, he asked if there was a return policy for the pet store. So it's been a
we can all picture this guy just with the way you set it up.
Yes. So when he first met me, I may have been wearing khaki pants and a polo shirt and, you know, be prepared
to
meet
the
parents. Yes. Yes. And, you know, the first impression was, can you take him back? we don't know if he's going to mesh well out of the farm. So.
let me guess. You didn't own a cowboy hat at that point. You didn't know what cowboy boots were. You definitely didn't have a belt buckle that big.
No. Just some white tennis shoes and a baseball cap if I'm lucky. So
I have a lot of questions about the beginning here because yours is a little bit unique. How long did it take that you were accepted, or how did I got the way Jennifer's brothers did it is they ran me through several tests that I didn't know were tests. And did you have a test or two?
I had a big test. So just real quick, brief story. Jess and I moved to Minnesota for Jessica's master's program. And so right after we started dating, a year after we started dating. So I really hadn't gotten to spend time on the farm. And then, so we were up there for 5 years and came back to Illinois, be closer to the farm. Within a week of being back, which was in the middle of July in the Midwest, so 100 degree temps with 100% humidity, I get asked if I want to come out and help with baling hay. I'm like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not? How hard can that be?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not afraid of hard labor, but, you know, I've never been on the farm, but I, again, want to make an impression. And so, yeah, I'll go out there. And he even told me I could sleep in. He didn't need me out there until about 9 o'clock in the morning. So I'm like, all right. So I get out to the farm. You can come out and help me rake the hay is what he said. All right. I don't know the process, but sure, I kind of get it. And my father-in-law is a machine mechanic, like farm mechanic. And so everything he has is very old, but it runs like a top because it keeps it running. And so we're on a 1950s Alice Chalmers.
Where the clutch takes two people to push down.
Exactly. It takes two people to push down, has a couple of wires that you have to pull to get it started, all of that fun stuff.
Shifting, it's like you need to step on it to get the...
Yes. Yep. So he gets me up there and I'm going to sit on the fender and ride a few rounds with you around the field, make sure you understand what you're doing. I'm like, okay. So test two came along about halfway through the first round when he said, I'll see you later. I'll be back when you're finished. And we make it a full round. So I didn't hit any fences, which was good. Then he shows up. Now the real work. We have a baler that they ended up buying for $50, 1950s, 1960s baler. We spent all day working this hay field.
And this was the kind that dropped it on the ground, wasn't it?
Yes. Well, it had a chute that would bring it up to the rack, okay. But we would hook it and then drag it across the rack and stack.
Yep.
And so I wasn't on the tractor. I was on the back.
You weren't getting the cushy job.
No, I wasn't getting the cushy job at all. And I will admit that I lost a rack. You know, all the hay kind of top. I didn't stack it tight enough, so it all fell off to the side. So there was another test. That one I didn't do so well on.
And then he didn't tell you that you had to pull it into the barn and take it all off again.
Exactly. So we were there all day from, I would say, 11 a.m. to about 5 p.m. making hay. And I'm beat. You know, that heat just zaps you out of it. I knew now I could kind of see the picture of what's going on because Jessica, I don't know if she alluded this to her show. She's the only daughter and only grandchild of the family. And she has six uncles. So I have to run through this whole gamut of all these uncles that are working on the farm with me. So I'm trying to keep up, and you know, they're all in their, you know, 50s and 60s, and I'm trying to keep up with them. And I'm a young pup at 25, 26 at the time. And they just were kind of shocked when they said, well, we got to pull this into the barn. You're good to go home. You got all this done. We're going to pull it into the barn and unstack it. And I said, and I don't know why, maybe it was the heat talking, but I said, sure, I'll help you guys. I don't need to go home. And then I realized that's actually the worst part of making hay.
Yeah, but that was the final test.
That was the final test.
If you had gone home, that would have been it. You were done.
Yep. Yep. I made it through the barn. I made it through the barn. We unloaded, I think, two or three racks. And yeah, ever since then, they can't get rid of me now. And
congratulations. That is a test. They all do it. Now, mine was a little easier and a little different. Her brothers, one of who was at the time a Green Beret.
Oh, okay.
They had a gun range on the farm. So they, and this was shortly, this wasn't too long in. They said, you have to come down and shoot with us. So and they had some of the biggest guns I've ever seen. I mean, he was a Green Beret.
Yeah.
And so I had to go down to the gun range. Well, it turns out I had shot before. They didn't know that. And I didn't tell them because I thought if I suck at this, I'm not going to tell them. And then I did very well. And that was it. I was in after because I could shoot a gun. But you had these brothers taking me to the gun range. And it was like, okay, exactly. Well, that's intimidating. I have a couple quick questions for you then.
Yes.
All right. Have you ridden a horse yet?
Yes.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes.
Will you do it again?
Oh, yes. Okay. I definitely enjoy it enough.
Okay.
And to be honest, me and Jess have a great relationship, but her trying to teach me how to ride a horse.
Oh, no, that doesn't work.
Doesn't work so well.
It didn't work for me and Jennifer either. It didn't work for Jamie and Chad either, I don't know.
So, you know, if we were out riding, you may have heard heels down about a million times. So, and they would always put me on the push button horse, the one that, you know, every new rider gets. We have a herd of about 20. So it's all kind of like, and they're all paints and quarter horses. And so I'm still trying to learn as much as I can about the horse world. For one, obviously I enjoy it. I enjoy being outside and being around the horses. But also it will help in my career too with Spalding Labs.
Jamie and I both got our first fly predators this week, a couple days ago. And I want to know from all of you out there that get fly predators, if you're like Jennifer and I, and you have to wait for them to hatch before you put them out. And they come in this clear bag at the clear on the top, and we put it out. And then every morning we go check and see if they hatched. And I beat on the bag because I want to wake them up. Is it wrong? Shouldn't I beat on the bag?
I probably wouldn't. Well, I mean, people want to instantly grab it and pick it up. And the best way to watch for the fly predators to hatch, or if they are hatching, is lay it flat and just keep an eye on the edges. A lot of times they start moving
but that's
out.
Boring.
I know.
I want to tap on the bed.
Listen, Glenn, don't. It's like going to an aquarium and hitting the tank.
I do that too.
They're trying to sleep, man. They're growing up. They're developing. Okay.
I got to know what you're the operations manager, and I don't know if this is a state secret, so you can say no and not tell me. But what does a fly predator factory look like? Is it a piles of rows of poop?
This is a great question.
I don't know
how
this is done.
So it's very interesting. There are some things I cannot discuss because it is proprietary. Yeah. But there are some things. So we do actually have to raise flies to raise fly predators because we need the fly pupa to get taken over by the fly predators. So then we can ship them out to the customer. So there is an assembly of, you know, this stage is the adult fly. They're laying their pupa into a media, which then they sift the pupa, the cocoon stage.
What do they do? Go in there with the tweezers and pluck them out? These things are tiny.
But not talking, let him finish.
Well, we're talking millions of flies. So when they sift through that, they will find the cocoon stage. So the fly will lay an egg into the media, which then goes through the maggot stage and then goes to the pupal stage, which is the hard cocoon. So when they go and sift that out, they find those hard cocoons, and then they bring in the fly predators and let the fly predators lay eggs inside of those cocoons, which then kills the fly, but also has another fly predator incubating, I guess you can say, that cocoon. So then when we gather those cocoons, we package them up, send them out to our customers. So it is quite the process. It is quite the facility that we do have. I've gotten to visit it numerous times. I work with the shippers because one of our shipping centers is out of the insectary as well. So I work with the shippers and I've gotten the full tour, the full nickel tour. And it is a smelly, hot job.
Well, I was going to say, is it loud with all millions of flies buzzing at the same time?
it's loud. It's hot. It's in a large, they have to have things at a certain temperature to incubate and to get them to the stage they need to be able to have a finished product.
Okay, so, let me ask this real quick. Mm-hmm. So the little brown little pupas that we get in the mail are actually mm-hmm. fly pupas that a predator has gone in and killed the...
Yes, yeah. So the fly predators are parasitic wasps. So they drill into, they don't have a stinger. So what they do have is almost like a straw instead of a stinger. And they use that straw to drill into that fly cocoon, which then they'll lay an egg inside the cocoon, which then kills the fly inside the cocoon. But then that's a food source for that developing fly predator. So then when that fly predator is ready to hatch out, it will actually drill back through a hole and come out. It doesn't crack open like an egg, but they drill a small hole out and they start looking for a fly cocoon to take over to lay their eggs. So it's a continuous process. So when you get your package out on your property, those little fly predators are going to pop out of those fly cocoon and start rooting around for a fresh fly cocoon to take over to lay an egg, which then kills the fly.
Gotcha.
I never knew how that worked. That's fascinating.
And so a fly predator, a female fly predator, can kill about 100 flies in its 4-week time frame.
Oh, wow.
And the smallest pack for people that haven't used fly predators, our smallest pack is 5,000 fly predators. So you're killing a lot of flies with just the 5,000. That's going to cover up the 5 horses. And then if you add five more thousand, that's going to cover up the 10 horses and so on. We have great agents with Spalding Labs that if you have any questions at all, you can feel free to give us a call. And we'll even go through the entire process with you about that.
All I'm envisioning right now is you sitting down like with a hand and going, 1, 2, 3.
I do help our entomologists. I do help Jess with hand counting. We do some QC testing on the fly. No pun intended.
3,429, 3,430.
Yep. Don't say any other numbers as we're sitting there counting these. And we will go through kind of a QC check just to make sure that we're sending the correct number.
Well, so, I can tell you, the first bag I got, I counted them and you were off by 2.
I got 2 extra, Glenn.
So what I'll do, I'll get a priority envelope together for you and send you 2 more.
Thank you. Ben, you've been delightful. They can get, go to Spalding. I'm trying to remember the website now.
SpaldingLabs.com.
SpaldingLabs.com. And yep. It is important that you're going to get asked questions and you want to be, you want to be accurate in your answers about how many horses and all that stuff, because that does determine what they send to you. And it works. I'll tell you what, it works. Because we started getting flies already, and Jennifer's first question was, when do we get our first predators?
The whole thing is like, I don't know who's not using predators at this point. So yeah. You guys are doing the right thing for sure. It's
Thank
working.
You. Thank you. It's been a great project or great product. And, you know, I jumped ship from a 20-year career to start a whole new career because I believed in the product and seeing the results just working with Jess. So I love it. Well, knocks man, down 60% of our flies on our farm. So
thank you for stopping by today. We really appreciate
thank you.
I have your father-in-law coming on the show on Monday.
Okay. I will probably be with them because I'll probably have to help with the tech. But yes, you ask him any questions about me working around. He might even tell you how I set a tractor on fire.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's right, this day in equine history. And we're going back to March 26th of 1943 to a chestnut colt named, and I hope this doesn't get Jamie all riled up for some reason, a colt named Assault, who was born on the famous King Ranch in Texas. You know, he, as a foal, was injured. He stepped on a surveyor's stake, which drove a hole through his right front hoof. It left him with a permanent limp and a deformed foot. That's correct. This is his unique story. Despite that, he became the 7th Triple Crown winner in 1946.
But he limped?
Yep. Because again, he limped, he got a nickname, and his nickname was the Club-Footed Comet. And he, to this day, remains the only Texas-bred horse to win the Triple Crown.
Time out.
Yep.
Okay, obviously before Hissa was, there's no veterinarians yeah. that said, hey, that horse is lame, he shouldn't, well, but he just went.
He running was no problem, he won the Triple Crown, so.
I guess not. That's crazy. I didn't know that. I've got the book right here on Assault by Eva Boyd. I haven't read it yet, but now I have to.
Yeah, apparently it's cool. There's your next book report right there.
Well, Eddie Arcaro, who was obviously a Hall of Fame jockey, you might have heard his name. He said, this is his quote, Assault was a great horse. And anyone who says he isn't is a jerk who doesn't know anything about horses.
That's to the point.
Super eloquent, Mr. R. Carroll. Yeah.
Didn't say anything about the horse, just the people who make fun of the horse.
You're a jerk. You don't know nothing.
Oh my God. They put that on the cover.
It's right on the back. Right on the back there.
In 1702, a single stumble changed the course of the British Empire, and it started with a horse named Sorrel. Sorrel wasn't just any mount. He was a high-spirited chestnut, of course, who had...
Hold on. Again. That's... Now we know 1702 was when they started naming horses the color. Yes. Red. Right. I've never heard a horse named Sorrel, but we got red, we got blacky, we got yellow, we got, you know... All of it.
Sorrel killed the king, so we're going to get to that. Sorrel wasn't any mount. He was a high-spirited chestnut who had previously belonged to Sir John Fenwick. Well, King William III of England decided to execute Sir John Fenwick for treason.
Uh-oh.
And took his horse.
Okay.
And then fate came back to get him. On a crisp morning in late February, while the king was riding Sorrel through the grounds of Hampton Court Palace, Sorrel tripped on a molehill and threw the monarch to the ground. He broke his collarbone, an injury that triggered a downhill spiral of pneumonia and fever, leading to his death. Is that ironic or what? Because the king died without an heir, the crown passed to Queen Anne, the last of the Stuart monarchs, effectively reshaping the political map of Europe. Anybody knows, I'll just go into this a little bit. I won't get crazy. But it took on a life of its own. It became a thing, especially the molehill, the how he died.
Mountain in a mole, made a mountain out of a molehill. Look at that.
The king's enemy, the Jacobites, led to the whole the Civil War thing. Were thrilled by all of this, and they kind of made the horse into this, well, they drank to him. Apparently, for years after, the rebels would gather in the secret pubs, and they would raise a glass to the little gentleman in the black velvet jacket. What they meant, it was kind of a code for talking about the mole who made the molehill. So they toasted to the mole for years after. And you can find a statue, an equestrian statue of William III at London St. James Square, which I actually saw. And at the bottom of the horse's foot is a molehill.
No way.
Yes. Isn't that a fascinating? It's just so.
So usually you don't let me do stories about people dying. I mean, this is too soon, Glenn. This was 1702. Too soon.
Actually, all of mine are about people or horses dying because it's history. So really, they're all about dying, except for the next one.
Hold on. I do see this here that you put down the king's enemies celebrated the accident as a form of equine justice. Yes. I'm writing that down. I'm going to get a shirt that says equine justice. It's like a gavel with a horseshoe on it.
Fate, you know, Close. Some people don't believe in fate. I think fate took its course there. All right. This one I missed on the 23rd, so a couple days ago. Vermont state lawmakers chose the Morgan horse as the state's official animal on March 23rd, 1961. The breed, of course, is named for Justin Morgan, who brought the colt named Figure to Vermont in the 1790s. All of the lineage for the breed came from Figure, and the Morgan is considered the first original American horse breed.
I mean, did anybody write that book better than Marguerite Henry?
Right. There you go.
Justin Morgan had a horse.
Okay, so now I don't know how many states have horses as their official animal. Look that up quick, because I don't know the answer to that. Maybe
Look
I only just thought about
quick.
It now.
How? I don't type that fast. Many states.
Me either. That's why I had you do it.
What was the question?
I took 3 years of typing in the days when you were practicing. There were no computers. You practiced on a typewriter, and I got D's all 3 years, and I still can't type. So there's that. The official state animal.
I never took typing, so I somehow got out of that.
You know, kids, when computers came along, just learned to type. They didn't need a class, right? They just figured it out. We didn't have that.
Okay. Time. States with specific horse equine designations. This says here, while over a dozen states have official state horses.
Oh, wow.
Others have horses listed as state animals, state mammals, or honorary equines. Okay, right. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so Alabama is the racking horse.
Of course.
Florida, Florida cracker.
Yep.
Idaho, Appaloosa.
Oh, wow.
We got a battle here because Kentucky.
This week is the National Appaloosa Championships at the World Equestrian Center here.
Well,
a lot
good
of spotted
to know.
Horses coming up.
A lot of spots down there. I feel like Kentucky and Maryland should fight because they both listed the thoroughbred. Maryland
really?
Thoroughbred? What?
Yeah. Well, Maryland's okay. Big in thoroughbreds, yeah.
I know, but it's not as big as Kentucky. No offense, Maryland people. Okay, you know the truth. Massachusetts also has the Morgan horse, Missouri fox trotter. Mississippi is the quarter horse. New Jersey. New Jersey state animal is horse.
Just horse.
North Carolina has the colonial Spanish. In Jersey, they don't mess around. No, it's a horse.
We don't need to be specific
here. We don't care what kind of horse it is.
It's all the horses. We're not being prejudiced.
You're a horse. North Carolina colonial
no
Spanish
offense,
Mustang.
Lorene, no offense.
I love all of you. I've offended so far Maryland and New Jersey.
But you
Let's
know what?
See
we can offend Lorene this week. She didn't send in a sound file, so.
Oh, bless it, Lorene. Let's see. Dakota horse is North Dakota. North Carolina's colonial Spanish Mustang. Oklahoma is the American quarter horse.
Of course, yeah.
South Carolina is the Marsh Tacky.
I kind of figured.
About those. Tennessee is the Tennessee walking horse. Duh. Texas, guess what Texas's horse is?
Oh, they lost out on quarter horse? Paint.
No, they have quarter horse. Oh, I thought that was a gimme. Vermont is also the Morgan horse, and Virginia. You want to guess what Virginia is?
Oh, well, what did George Washington rode some kind of big racking horse?
No,
or something,
think Marguerite Henry.
Oh, is it the Chincoteague?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
There you go. Yeah. Missouri also designated the Missouri mule as its state animal, while South Carolina also includes the mule, just so you know. I can dive deeper in AI if you want, but I think we're good.
I think that's good. But I didn't know all that. Look, we all learned something today.
Well, I gave AI about 4 seconds to tell me all that. So it could all be wrong. I don't know.
And that's all for this day in equine history. I need a closing. I need to get this music figured out. Jamie had a great idea. She said I should have the little piece of that catchy tune right between each story, and I should, but I keep forgetting to do it. And then I should have it go out too. So you skip that part and you just go to this part. I love this part. I don't know why.
I just feel like dancing, or feel like I'm walking into
1920s.
Six Flags had like a place like that in Georgia. I feel like I'm walking into Six Flags.
This is kind of music part music, isn't it?
I can smell the cotton candy, roasted almonds. Yeah, cool.
And on that note.
He says one thing and he means another, but hey, he can't help it. He's a horse trader. Horse trading. Well, it's a laissez-faire. Let the buyer beware. Horse trading. But tell a low-down lie with a sincere stare. Horse trading. Well, if the talking in circles and the deal ain't square, he's a master in the fine art of persuading. Horse trading.
That's right. It is time for Really Bad Ads, that time of the week when listeners submit ads from Craigslist or Facebook, and we just have a little bit of fun with them. And for everybody that submits, we put their name in a hat, and we draw winners at the end of the month for some terrific prizes that are donated by these companies. Well, we have the Ultimate Tail Care Toolkit from Tail Cinch. That's a $100 value. You're going to get one of the rump rubber tail guards. That's a tail guard that is really cool. I saw this at the show. It protects the tail from rubbing. It actually weaves into the tail. It's pretty cool how it works. And you have that. I talked to somebody yesterday who had a tail rubber. So this is perfect for that. It comes also with reusable tail ties and also their tail tie shampoo detangler, which is a all natural detangler. There's nothing in it that's bad for your horse or the environment. It's specifically formulated to be non-greasy. So that's a great package. It's from tailcinch.com. If you need a tail guard, take a look at them. It's the coolest one I've seen yet, and I've seen a lot of tail guards over the years. Plus, a $100 gift certificate from the Equestrian Chocolate Company. The Equestrian Chocolate Company offers artisan chocolates that's a blend of fine art and fine chocolate. Each bar uses premium single-ingredient cocoa sourced from the world's top 10% of cocoa beans. It's simple, high-quality ingredients. The chocolate bars feature an original equestrian-inspired artwork by the sculptor Tammy Tappan.
And they're so pretty.
And includes a complimentary fine art print. When you get your candy bar, there's actually a coupon to get a free print. So it's kind of cool how that works. And we do have a coupon code. It's HRN for $10 off your first order at EquestrianChocolateCO.com. EquestrianChocolateCO.com.
All right. Well, if you send your ad in and you read it to us and to like your phone recording and you send that to us, you get double the entries for these prizes. If you read it in an accent that is not your own, you get triple the entries. So get those in, you guys. We also get so many in that we don't have time for all of them. Cynthia, Caitlin, Debbie, Jolynn, Janelle, Michelle, another Michelle, since Michelle Day, and Tamara, you guys are all entered, even if we don't read your ads. But Savannah sent the first one in, and that's all yours.
All things horses on Facebook. I don't know what state it says, what state, but I can't read that part. Mustang mare looking for a new home. She not broke to ride, but would make great project horse for someone.
Just not me.
She all in your pocket for treats. She would make a good horse for someone who wants to work with one. You just said that in the first sentence. We don't know anything about training horse, but she definitely not the craziest Mustang out there. Reach out for more info if interested and questions.
Yeah, I have questions. So you don't know a lot about horse training. Are you well-versed in Mustangs? English, punctuation?
Or Mustangs in general? Because how would you know this isn't the craziest one out there?
It ain't the craziest one, I seen.
Although you can probably always find something crazier, right? Yeah. And why do they always say it would make a great project for you, not me?
Not me.
Did you see the size of the Western saddle on this poor little Mustang?
Look at
the picture,
man.
On the left.
Look at the Mustang's belly.
This Mustang is not malnourished. I got to say that.
No. Amanda sent this one in. This is quality horses in South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, and Virginia. And it sounds just like somebody would be coming from here, okay? Because they say this is quality horses, but anyone willing to trade a project horse for an 06 Chevy Silverado?
You know, I had one to trade, but I need an 07. I don't want the 06 model.
Shocking to me is I can't see them, but I can see that there are 48 comments. Yeah, they
had to be good. I wish we had the comments on this one. That's like, very specific for somebody that wants an 06 Chevy Silverado.
It ain't running, but you know what?
The bottom's rusted out, but you know what? It's a project horse. What do you want?
Project truck for project horse.
Faye sent the next one in. It's a good pony. That's the name of the ad. Good pony. 15. There's no. Why did I give
you
this one to
you did it to
me?
Yourself again.
Why did I do that? 15-year-old pain pony. Let's start over. 15-year-old pain pony. It's P-A-I-N pony. 47 inches, 2 teeth worn away. Not sure why he is gentle as can be, but has a little spunk to him. I know they did lead lenning on him at County Fair Clean Coggins.
$1,000, and it's a mini that it looks emaciated and has no teeth.
The teeth are worn away. Not sure why he is gentle.
That if horses are, this is what I'm learning, people, when you're reading ads.
Yes.
If they say the horse is 8 years old, it's minimum 15. If they say the horse is 15, minimum 30. Yes.
Especially with teeth that are gone.
And is the gray above the ear, the eyes. Oh,
you know what? We have 2 18-year-olds here on the farm and they have all their teeth. It's amazing how that works.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why his teeth are gone. Maybe because he's 42.
But he's been lead-leaned at the county fair.
Yeah. And by the way, genteel is not how you spell that. Marta sent this one in. What is this? Curb alert. Have 2 wheelbarrows of dirt, some grass roots. We have bunnies, so it's good for your garden. Bring your own bags. Did somebody take the time to put that ad up?
Apparently. And it's well fertilized by the bunnies, which bunny poop, I don't know if you've ever smelled bunny poop, but it's unique. It is definitely unique bunny poop. It's kind of in there with chicken poop.
But you're literally telling somebody to come pick up bunny poop from 2 wheelbarrows.
It's not even a lot.
That's really stupid. It's just really
somebody
stupid.
Somebody probably did. Kayla sent the next one in. Okay, that's an interesting looking trailer of the week.
I've never seen anything like that in my entire life.
No, I haven't either. It's a horse float, so it's either from England or Australia. I don't know which. Description: horse float, location Bullsbrook, suitable for 2. Okay, this is homemade. This is a homemade puke mustard colored horse trailer that looks like it could double as a prison cell for inmates in the 1940s.
Okay, side note, Bullsbrook is a suburb in Australia.
Okay, this kind of looks Australian, and I don't mean that to be offensive, Kayla, but it kind of has an Australian look, like they used it for prisoners at one point, and then they decided to cut the roof off.
You said prisoners, they're going to just get out in like 2 seconds.
Giraffes, maybe? Do we have camels in Australia? Maybe camels. Man. This would
to be fair. It has no rust on it,
and the tires are full, and it has a jack. This is a good trailer, except for the mustard yellow and the prison bars all the way around it,
and the fact that there's no roof.
It's definitely homemade. There's no question. Probably last you 100 more years for $3,250.
All you got to do is go to Bullsbrook.
Well, I can barely read the next one.
Oh my God, wait, what? Hold on, let me get my glasses. Danielle sent this one in.
It's a copy, it's a screenshot, so it's really small. The letters are about 4 point.
And Jamie she copied and pasted it up above, hold on. She had a study notes. Okay, I can see that because they're up top above, okay. This looks like a Dream Horse ad. You know how they have the little things, that's Dream Horse. And here's the about that Danielle sent in. Roses, just a good family horse who was never really taken off the place. She has wrote a few parades and few trail rides. At 5 years old, she had her first filly the next year. She had a stud coat.
I've got gelding wrong. They've never gotten colt wrong.
She had a stud coat. It was the only two times she was ever reed. She rides in snaffle, can ride bareback, or with the saddle, has never been driven, just all around nice, quiet horse.
How would they bless know that? Heart. We first of all, do we know how old it is now?
It says, I got to read my glasses here.
Oh, they went $4,500.
May 2010. She's 16.
16. And now keep in mind in the ad, she said she has wrote a few parades and few trail rides at five. So they haven't done anything for 11 years with this horse.
Asking price is $4,500.
For a horse that hasn't been ridden in 11 years.
She had a filly colt. She had a stud coat.
Stud coat. Why was that important, by the way, in the end?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Wayne sent this one in. It was a Morgan, though, so that ties in with another theme we have going today. Wayne sent this one in. Wanted, halfling or stud for breed. Now, you all have to, this is very short. You have to listen very closely, okay? Wanted, halfling or stud for breeding $1 in West Phoenix, your old stomping ground, probably your neighbor. Looking for a halfling or stud to breed with my registered halfling or male. Please call with any information. How many babies you think are going to come out of that, Jamie?
I don't even want to envision what that is. Oh,
it is a first. That's the first we've ever had that 15
years. I like what Wayne commented. So proud.
That one's so fun.
I want to breed my neighbor. My registered halflinger male. Okay. That's where proofreading pays.
Oh, and that would have been a good one to have the comments. Hey, when you guys are submitting these, if the comments are brilliant, send us the comments too.
We will. We want to know all of it. Okay, Betty sent this one in. It is from a Facebook page, Humane Society of the Pikes Peak Region.
Colorado. I did
edit it a little bit because it was really, really long. And now it's just really long.
Okay.
And it is a picture. Should we say what it is? It's a picture of a white dog that's available for adoption. Little white fluffy dog. Bonjour, mi ami. Allow me to introduce myself. The French accent is there. Like, that's it. That wasn't even really French. My name is Simba. Please hold your applause. Once I was a man, pardon, a gentleman of great charm, a lover of life, a heartbreaker. This is like a dog ad, okay? I was not merely handsome, I was dangerous. Women would see me and immediately question their life choices. Sunglasses came off, hair was flipped, time slowed, birds sang louder. I did nothing to earn this power except to exist. Yet when I arrived here, I was unrecognizable, a ghost of glamour, a crime against beauty. I smelled like a sewer that had been abandoned by other sewers.
This has to be AI.
People did not lean in. They leaned away and said things like, oh, buddy, which is never followed by romance. The ladies no longer whispered, who is that? They whispered, oh, no. They shaved away the mats of my shame. They bathed me in warm water. They fluffed me, trimmed me, polished me. But the true transformation was inside. This is very dramatic for a tiny white dog. Through pets, praise, and enrichment games, which I dominated effortlessly because I'm extremely intelligent and humble. Oh, they rebuilt my confidence. Now I'm a reformed ladies' man. Yes, the mademoiselle still admire me on my walks. I allow it. I am not cruel. I accept a compliment, perhaps a harmless scratch behind the ears, but my heart, non-negotiable. It belongs to one woman only. Who's that? I thought he was for adoption. So merci, the organization, for shaving away my past, restoring my mojo, and helping a once fallen Casanova find the love of his life. I came in a mess. I left a legend.
There's a picture of him on the left, and he looked like he'd come out of a sewer. His hair was really long and matted and gross and everything. And then the next picture is him being shaved completely, except for his ears.
He is wearing a jacket.
I don't know what the jacket's for. Was he for adoption, for sale? I don't know. Oh, it's from the Humane Society, Pikes Peak, so you would assume that he was
I don't know. I don't get it. It was a lot.
It was a lot.
It was just bad and adorable at the same time. Okay. And then as I do on Fridays when we're sitting here doing nothing or you're talking and I'm bored, I went on to Craigslist and looked just a quick search of ads in my area. One of which I did respond to, and I'm waiting on the text back because it's in Norman. I might as well go see it. I mean, it's like right down the street. Duh. Okay. But other than that, I did find this ad, and this is also in Norman, and I did not inquire on this one. Here's the Craigslist ad. Almost 3-year-old stud quarter horse cross, $2,000 in Norman, Oklahoma. Describe the picture, please.
It's a picture looking in a barn door with a horse on a lead rope about halfway across the barn.
It's in the barn.
You can barely see the horse.
What? Okay. And here's the beautiful ad from my neighbor here in Norman, Oklahoma. I have a lot of media. Him, this is a young horse.
What?
Just good start. He is still growing. Around 14 hands he knows how to dance. Oh, God. You can ride him most of major work is done. He just needs someone who can. Oh, God. He just needs someone who can stay on top of him.
So he's a little bit of a bucker then.
He has a scar on his back legs because he hurt herself in the stall, but he is not lame or anything. We cleaned the car up. He has one testicle ascended.
Where'd the car come into the picture?
I don't know, but I'm actually realizing that this is owned by the same people that I texted about the other horse. I'm in trouble. You mean to read you what I texted? Let's see if I can find that ad I just texted about. There's so many good ones in Oklahoma. It's like, how do I figure out which?
Why the cleaning the car had anything to do with the horse? Was he in the car? Did he get in the car? Did he believe
maybe
in the car? Did he take him to the
cult?
Bed in the car? I need to know. Call this person. I want to know.
I'm searching for the one I wrote. If you guys are poor.
By the way, while you're searching, I came up with the answer that we've been looking for weeks.
What?
How long does semen last frozen? I needed a damn answer after the last couple episodes. And it is 20 to 30 years if it's frozen correctly and cold enough. So I don't know. Do you think they put a little expiration date like they do cookies? You know, expires.
What happens if the power goes out?
It's dry ice, apparently, or something like that, or liquid something or other. It had to be frozen in. I don't know. I didn't read that close, but 20, 30 years. And I guess once it expires, it's just expired.
So, okay.
There you go.
Well, that's exciting. I can't find the ad I wrote in. It might be taken down already because I just was pretty sure it was a scam. So I texted, like, sure, they've got my phone number now, but I needed to know because this, it's all about entertaining you guys. Okay. Is this it?
We'll have to do it next week.
I'll look for it. You guys love it when I go horse shopping, even if I'm not shopping. So,
all right. That's it for today. Thank you, everybody. We hope you have a terrific weekend. Be safe. I do have a closing story here that you know how I am absolutely fascinated with the Guinness World Records.
Well, before you go, this might make it because there's a horse for sale that is 75% Friesian, 12.5% Percheron, and 50% Rocky Mountain.
It's a lot of percents.
That math ain't nothing. Sorry, I just had to jump in. Go
you
ahead.
Know how interesting your husband must be telling you stories about how interesting airports are right now. Yesterday, the day before, at the Philadelphia International Airport that I've flown through many, many times, it was on Monday. You probably went in expecting long security lines, but you got some entertainment because they were trying to set the world Guinness record for the longest line of cheesesteak sandwiches. That's right. Obviously, Philadelphia known for cheesesteaks.
Philly?
It's Philly. They're known for cheesesteaks. With 1,291 cheesesteak sandwiches that they made at the airport, all lined up in these bins. It was an enormous amount of cheesesteak sandwiches. And the departure hall. And it was National Cheesesteak Day, and they set the world record. The previous world record was 500 sandwiches, and now they have a new world record of 1,291. And after that, volunteers handed out the sandwiches to travelers, to airport workers, and to TSA. So everybody got a sandwich, all 1,291 of them. So there you go, new world record.
Okay. Spain in a geld.
Hang on, auditors. I have no idea.